to Agents of Smooch. For our vacation mission this week, we are landing in Nairobi, Kenya with the 2018 film Rafiki. This Kenyan-made film tells the love story of two young women caught between two competing political families. I am Smooch director Annette Weirstra, and traveling with me today, I have Agent Kathy Campbell. Hello, Kathy.
Hello, Director Annette. I'm super excited to be in this beautiful country and ready to talk about this absolutely gorgeous movie.
I am excited too. And we also have Agent Sage Young with us. Hello, Sage.
Hello. I am also very excited. And I really literally just finished this movie 15 minutes ago. So as I told everyone before we started, my feels are very fresh. So get ready for that.
Oh, it does give you the feels. That is for sure. And we also have a brand new agent and a brand new podcaster with us. And she is another Canadian, but from Toronto this time, not from Edmonton. We've got Agent Saria Veerappan. Hello, Saria, and welcome.
Hello. I'm very happy to be here. And I actually come from the continent of Africa, so very excited that I'm part of this podcast about an African movie. So looking forward to a deep dive on this one.
Well, and we had looked at doing a different movie initially for Africa, but then we are doing this in the pandemic, which also coincides with protests about Black Lives Matter. And we just felt like it was really important to look at a movie that was from an African perspective instead of white people going to Africa. So Sage came up with this as an idea, and I'm just really glad you did, Sage.
My pleasure. I was happy to see that it was like widely available, because I remembered, you know, editing a piece about this at an old job, which is basically how it came about, and I had always wanted to see it, and I was like, oh, this is a great excuse, and everything I knew about it, I thought it would make a good discussion piece for us, and so it did, I hope.
And I will put a link to the article because you sent it to us, and it's a really great article about the movie, and we'll put it in the show notes. This, I think, is the first time any of us have seen the movie. And I just want to know, what were your initial thoughts about it as a movie?
So anytime I watch a movie, I'm always, as a photographer myself, I'm always very aware of cinematography choices and color grading and framing and stuff. And I was just blown away by the beauty of this movie. They took the most mundane, you know, an animal out in a field or a dirt road, and it was colored so beautifully that you could just feel the love letter to Kenya in this movie. And I just was in awe of how soft and hard and light and dark, and it deserves all the awards for the like cinematography for it, because it was just beautiful.
Totally agree. I thought it was so beautifully filmed. It really picked up, I think, a lot of the colorful nature of Africa, which a lot of times with media, they don't necessarily portray that part of Africa. So, I mean, I thought the director was really very careful in depicting, you know, a really whimsical view of Nairobi. And I thought it was really gorgeously filmed.
That's so interesting that you bring that up, Saria, because I was reading a little bit more about it, and I was reading an NPR piece that the filmmaker did back when it came out in the U.S., which was like spring 2019. What I didn't know about her necessarily was that her and a few other filmmakers founded this style, essentially, that they call Afro Bubblegum. And they say that they have sort of like a mission statement that is like fun, fierce, frivolous depictions of African life. And so that's like a very conscious thing that they want to put out into the world, is, you know, art that is fun and colorful and celebratory and joyful. And I think you see that all in this film, like despite obviously the things that occur that are uncomfortable and violent, and but you know, so much about it is just is so thoughtfully crafted in that way. The coloring reminded me, not that the coloring looked like it, but its relationship to color reminded me a lot of The Florida Project, which I think is also like a beautifully shot film with an amazing sense of color that has that the sort of geometry of the buildings in this movie where it was just incredibly done. And I literally had hard and soft in my notes. So you took that right out of my mind.
I'm sorry.
No, I'm like, I'm so glad we all took the same thing from this. Yeah. I mean, like the van in the, you know, in, near the soccer field, like I was just like, oh, it's hard and soft. Like that is what that is. So I just, it was very I don't want to say soothing because there are, you know, things that are uncomfortable that happen. But, like, for the most part, it was just a really lovely movie to fall into.
Yeah, it really struck me, the use of light, too, especially in the scenes where Kenna and Zeke were together. And you'd have those like, backlit sunspots sort of like casting this beautiful light and sort of washing it all out that made it look almost surreal.
It was like dreamy.
Yeah, and I particularly like the scene with them in the club. Remember, that was just so beautifully done, and you know, just the sort of the interactions between the two of them, the way they were looking at each other and the light and the neon, the pink, the purples, it was really, really beautifully done. And I think it had that sort of feminine piece as well, you know, with the with the lighting and the colors. And being, you know, a lesbian movie, I thought that was really well done as well.
Yeah, and the intimacy that was in this without feeling overtly sexual, not that that's bad, but like they had a very specific type of story that they were wanting to tell. And you felt... intimate is the only word I can really think of on how connected they were as characters and as people. And the camera just was part of that intimacy. It was just, just beautifully done.
I like how there was no, you know, despite what, where they are and what's going on around them and how some people around them feel, there's never the sense of like them being afraid of their feelings for each other. I mean, Kenna is a little bit, she's a little bit like nervous to begin with, but it's not because she doesn't know who she is. It's really just like, you know, this fear of somebody who by the way is like very sort of straightforward, and like when she says like, "I see how you look at me," I was like, "Whoo,
right?"
Like, okay. But yeah, they, you know, there's no sort of "but I can't" aspect to that relationship. And that was something I felt about, you know, Portrait of a Lady on Fire when it came out at the end of the year. It's like, nobody has time for that, you know? Like, these people are old. They're old enough, and it's set in the present day. Like, let's give people a little bit of credit that they know who they are and just kind of skip over that whole part where they sit in their room and, like, have a come-to-Jesus conversation with themselves about it. Right? Like, I don't know if I'm explaining that well.
and no, even the big, I don't know, like falling out, I guess, in quotation marks, where Zeke's like, "You need to go away. You need to leave. Like, I'm leaving. I can't have you here anymore." You still see her break down with her mom asking her to be able to stay. So you're not ever, as an audience member, you immediately learn that Zeke still loves Kenna. Like, there's not that ambiguity. You know that as a character, she feels, you know, betrayed or whatever, but still goes out and looks for her when she learns that she's back in town. So, like, I like that solid footing, that storytelling choice of, we're not going to have this be a, "Oh, you don't love me anymore," because we got beaten up. It was, I have to tell you that I don't love you anymore because I'm being taken away from home.
Yeah, and I think even that scene with the mom was really beautiful because actually even with Kenna's dad, like, they're both empathetic. So even though they're in this sort of hostile community, hostile environment, there are still characters that support them and love them. And I think that was also, you know, nuanced and beautiful because, again, especially when you've got that sort of homophobic type of environment, you know, then it's sort of like everybody's painted with the same brush. Mm-hmm. And the love that the mother had for her child, even though she's sending her away because of maybe whatever community pressure she has, you know, she just felt for her and she, you know, she loved her. And same with the with Kenna's dad. And I thought that was a nice kind of relief from some of the other hostile aspects of the community.
The moment that got me too was when Kenna was sitting beside the building. And the young gay man who I don't think he has a line in the entire movie, but he sits down next to her and says nothing, and they don't touch, they don't look at each other, but he just sits with her, and even just thinking about it puts a little lump in my throat. But I was like, that was such a beautiful moment of like just solidarity.
Yes.
Yeah. Actually, at that moment, I was hoping he would say something because I was like, say something, because you've kind of sort of been like this background character all the way through. But I think you're right. You know, it was pretty powerful.
There's such a sense of restraint. We don't get a lot of movies that are very confident that they can tell their story in an hour and 20 minutes.
Yeah. The story breathed. Mm-hmm. There were these moments of quiet where there was no talking. All you heard were the birds or whatnot. And in pretty much any other movie, that would be filled with something. But there was all of those moments of pause, and the story, like, I could easily have watched another half hour of it, but they chose not to, and they didn't, and they still leaned into all of that, which was just absolutely beautiful.
The homophobia in the film, to me, too, it was, you know, you hear it from the preacher, and that's coming from a particular place, but, like, when you see it in practice, it's more about the way that you're supposed to behave and expected to behave, and also other people's jealousy, because the whole linchpin of this whole thing, right, is that these like gossipy ladies get it in them that they don't like this, I don't even know when they say the name of the girl who works at the food cart, who is obviously just like jealous,
right?
And so she starts something, and so it was more about like people who are not necessarily like coming at this from a pure hatred standpoint, but like all those sort of petty human things, like, and then added to that like what they have been told, which I thought was interesting. There were some aspects of it that just came from character rather than, like, as you said, it's like this community is not a monolith. People feel different ways about different things. Mm-hmm. And that is shown to us very, very clearly. Like the part where they're in the church and Zeke is like, no one cares. Like, no one's looking at us.
Right.
And to some degree, that's true. But to some degree, it's not, which is like the tragedy of that whole thing.
Yes.
Yeah. And actually on that note, I mean, I think, you know, if I could just create more context for, you know, what is seen as a lot of homophobia in Africa. You know, there's a couple of years ago, well, more than maybe 6 years ago, there was a number of articles that were written about the Christian right-wing movement or evangelical movement that have gone to Africa and really fanned the flames around homophobia and, like, homosexuality being an export from, you know, the West and an African kind of value system. You know, and it's not to say that those things didn't exist prior to this, but the Christian movement from the U.S. has infiltrated the churches and have really, like I said, fanned the flames.
Yeah.
And what might have just been like people would turn a blind eye, like in Uganda, they actually passed some laws outlawing homosexuality, which wasn't there, you know, in those sort of like hard terms before. So, you know, just to contextualize some of that homophobia, I think it's important to remember that colonial aspect as well.
100%.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And the sort of context of this movie, too, is that if you saw the article or read anything else about it, it was initially banned in Kenya, and they had to fight for it to be seen and for it to be in contention for the Oscar, which it ended up, of course, because I don't know what kind of choices are involved in that, but it seemed like it would be a long shot, considering it was so difficult to even get it shown,
right,
that they would be able to send it as their selection. But what aside from all of that, which is like important to know because it also has to do with the story and, you know, with these people who chose to make this film, to be in this film, to go see this film in Kenya, like all of that is, you know, on some level an act of bravery. But also, in this great NPR interview with the director, she was like, even if I didn't want to make a movie that addressed politics at all, like, you know, if I wanted to make like the most straightforward love story between two black women, like it's automatically politicized and that's not my choice, right. You know? And yeah, so it's like the context is useful for everything that was happening in Kenya with this film, but also it sucks that it to some degree like takes away from the film itself. Like we all wish we could just like enjoy things without having to think about, you know, that type of context. But yeah, I just her comments about that I thought were very thoughtful and yeah, made me see the film a little bit differently.
And from what I read, when it was finally released for about a week in Kenya, that it was sold out. Like many, many people went to it and saw it, which is good, but also then speaks like it's sad that it had such a limited release then.
Yeah, I think it has to run for 7 days for contention. So it sounds like they were just like, yeah, sure. Like,
have seven days.
Kid. We'll give you the 7 days. Yeah. But she said also in the same interview that the person, the classifications, the board or whatever it was like, if we ban your film, everyone's going to want to see it. Mm-hmm. So we're really just doing you a favor, which is probably not entirely true. But yeah, it's a whole story.
It doesn't help if no one can get to it, though, is exactly the other thing. Right. So it's like, yeah, but if you can't access it, that's a problem as well.
Yeah, but I agree. You know, that political milieu, it does take away from such a beautiful movie, right? And it's, you know, even if this was a heterosexual movie, the way they captured the sort of chemistry between these two characters and like that first love, I thought she, you know, she did such a great job of capturing that, you know, those pangs when you're just that young and you fall in love for the first time. You know, it was really tenderly portrayed.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Tender is a great word for that, because they're unsure, not of their feelings for each other, but like, okay, I have a girlfriend now, right. What? Like, just the are general, we holding hands? Like, yeah. And the whole scene in that van, again, hard and soft, with the cupcake and the candles yeah. And mm-hmm. the talking, it was so sweet. And wonderful to see.
And the way they touch each other, too, is just like that it spoke volumes of inexperience, but also of sort of the joy and pleasure of just touching someone even on the arm. You know, it yes. just felt so yeah. loaded, and the chemistry between them was fantastic. Their ability is so many times to just give a look. I love it. Like,
I mean, that first look that when you see Kenna yeah. look up and see Zeke dancing.
Yes.
You're just like, oh, okay.
And her eyes are gorgeous. They're so expressive. I don't know. She just speaks volumes through her gaze.
Yeah.
I love a relationship, too, where one person is like the strong, silent type and the other person is a little bit more like goes for it, and it's kind of bubbly. Like they just had a great, they were such a great pair. They played off of each other so incredibly mm-hmm. well.
Yeah.
Did you notice mm-hmm. how Kenna's wardrobe changes slightly over the course of the movie? Not in a way that you're changing how she dresses, but she was adding a scarf or adding like a little more pattern and color to her look in a subtle way that just showed how the relationship was changing her a little bit, but not in essence.
Yeah, it wasn't a full like, oh, now I am a lesbian and I'm going to be dressed like my girlfriend and, you know, I've gone through this very adult period. It was I can do that. I can add, I don't have to be one of the boys mm-hmm. and I can add something, and I don't have to be, you know, super girly and wear a dress every day, because of course she's allergic to them. But I can experiment and discover new things and try something new and be inspired by Zeke and have fun without changing who I am.
Yeah. And just even like the joy of being in love too. Like it wasn't, it could just also like be that too. Like, you know, when you're just, you're actually excited to get dressed in the morning. Right. I mean, I haven't been excited to get dressed in the morning for 4 months, but right. I remember what it felt like.
I don't even remember how to do my hair anymore. What about, like as a couple, I just found them really engaging and convincing. But one of the moments I really loved was when they were talking about Kenna's future, and Kenna says she wants to be a nurse, and Zeke's like, why a nurse? Why not a doctor? Why not a surgeon? And as you see the movie go on, Kenna's underestimating herself in terms of her grades. But those final scenes when you see her, she's got a stethoscope. They don't outright say it, but she has a stethoscope around her. So clearly she is now a resident or an intern or something as a doctor, was my impression. Or possibly it's been long enough that she is a full doctor by then.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was really great. And I like the ending because I felt that was so positive. I mean, yes, they, you know, obviously had to break up for a period, but you at the end, you don't quite know if there's some way they'll get back together or at least see each other, rekindle their love. But the fact that it just didn't end with a, you know, doom and gloom kind of thing was great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to take that with that ending, with that conversation that they have before she leaves, where she says, what are we going to do? Get married and have a beautiful family. Mm-hmm. And Kenna's like, like, yes, we are, you know? So I want to believe that those two things are go together.
Well, especially because that story, that idea of let's live happily ever after, was Zeke's idea, because, you know, she got forced to go away because of parents or whatever. Now, clearly, for some reason, somehow she made it back into town. And so, yes, I headcanon is for Rafiki 2, Electric Boogaloo. They're going to live in the rave, and Kenna's a doctor, and Zeke makes delicious food and cleans house and takes care of their babies, and then has a beautiful choreography career as well. You know,
I was going to say dance school. So yeah,
yes.
or TikTok videos. That's what we're doing.
That was so teen to me. It was just like, there's always like a little group of girls practicing a dance everywhere you go.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Even more so now, but yeah, especially then.
I also liked that they did that ending in Kenya, because I think one of the ways you could have put them together in a way that is a happy ending is for them both to leave. So they cannot be together within Kenya. And I think by putting it and keeping the ending in Kenya, it's speaking to hope that eventually this law will be revoked, that people will be able to be who they are in Kenya legally. And, you know, hopefully by the time they are ready to be married and have a family, they will be able to within their home instead of having to leave their home.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great point, Annette. I think I hadn't thought of it that way, but I think, you know, the filmmakers, maybe they intentionally did that. And I mean, it also speaks to, that places can evolve and they don't just stay stagnant. Mm-hmm. And when you have more homosexual couples that maybe are coming out or it's becoming more normalized, then, you know, like you said, laws will change. So yes. I think, again, that was, I mean, I'm from South Africa where gay couples are everywhere and it's very normal. So I can imagine that would start influencing, you know, the rest of Africa.
Yeah.
I like too, I thought that there were some aspects of the film that had a little bit of a, not unrealistic, but almost like a symbolic tone. Like, the fact that that van was so close to exactly where they needed to be, and it was raining, and, you know, and then suddenly, and it's this place where no one else goes, that felt very symbolic to me of just sort of like finding a safe space and finding like a cocoon in an area where there are outside forces that, you know, don't want you to be together or don't want you to be who you are. That just felt like, oh, it was a little convenient, but I think in the way that we're supposed to think, to take it as more than just, oh, there just happens to be this cute little van covered in flowers and it's right here.
Right.
And no one else is using it for some reason.
Right. That was the part that really, like, blew my mind, was that, oh, they just happened to actually be available every single time that they went.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I think if you start looking at, I mean, there's a few things in the movie that are kind of naive, and but I think because it was so well done in terms of their actual chemistry between the characters, you sort of overlook, you know, some of the other pieces that don't quite fit.
Yes. Oh, 100%.
The other thing I was thinking is, you know, Nairobi is a huge city, and you know they were in one particular area called the Slopes, I think. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if they could really be, you know, almost anonymous and live together somewhere else in Nairobi, and people may never put two and two together in a sense, right? Yeah. So they could actually end up living together, and hopefully, like as we said, as things change, if they hopefully do, you know, they would be free to be themselves. But, you know, where that particular community that where they're from, everybody knew who they were and kind of, you know, knows every kind of every movement that they're making.
Mm-hmm. And both of their parents were politicians. Both of their dads were politicians. So, of course, everyone's going to know everything that's going on. I liked that little aspect, almost a Romeo and Juliet aspect thrown in. But it just, I am willing to ignore most any sort of plot holes for a story and characters that touch me as much as these do. So yes, that van absolutely was available anytime they needed it.
Oh no, it didn't bother me at all, by the way. I thought it was sort of
totally.
You know, the aspect with the parents, because that was something I didn't know going in before I started watching the movie, that their dads were both running for the same position. And I liked that because it was even before anyone suspects that they are together romantically, people are still saying like, oh, are you guys hanging out? Do your parents know you're hanging out? Like, right. People already don't want them because they're like enjoying this rivalry that apparently is like the whole town talking. And it just sort of pointed to like, just when you are a teenager and you are in a really small town and everybody knows your parents and everybody has seen you grow up and everything you do is under a microscope, it is very, very hard to be yourself. You know, it's certainly harder for some people than it is for others. But just in general, like that's a very like claustrophobic feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And it's a good example of how that sort of small community doesn't just happen in a small town in rural areas. Like there are small communities all over our lives where you have sort of an insular group who can get like that. Like I went to a small high school and within a large city, but all these people knew me for my whole school life and they all know everyone's business about you. So like having this within the larger city, having a small community where everyone's just up in your grill all the time about everything. Yes.
Yeah. And I think, you know, and that's probably, you know, even more evident in places like Africa where it is so community oriented. Mm-hmm. You know, so not much you can do without stepping out and having to, you know, shop or, you know, take a taxi or whatever. So everybody kind of knows who you are and your business.
Yeah.
So, I mean, wherever they went, they were being watched in a sense, right?
Yeah. And even if they were just friends hanging out, they would have been talked about. But then as soon as, I mean, like, what's her name? The friend that attacked Kenna when she was like drinking out of the faucet and was just like, everyone recognized and noticed that it wasn't just hanging out as friends, which also was taboo because of their fathers. But then that added layer on top of it was just like, no.
And they show very clearly, too, that the two families are, like, you know, Ziggy's parents, it seems like they're still together. They live in, like, what's clearly, like, a more expensive apartment that's, you know, they're certainly, like, more well-off. And, like, Kenna's mother is ill. Her father runs a store. Like, there was all those sort of great elements you look for in, like, a star-crossed lovers kind of kind of way. But they don't really, but it's just there. It's like, you know, no one knocks you over the head with it to explain it to you because these are tropes that we all know very, 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 very well. And just like let it exist and let it breathe without somebody saying like, but your family's rich. Like it's just, no one needs that. And his whole like campaign parade, right? Like, and her dad's reaction to it is just like, oh, man.
Yeah. The filmmakers trust in the ability of the viewer to understand what's going on in a way that is really nice and a respect version of, like, here, we're going to tell you this story. Nobody has to say that they're rich or that Kenna's parents are divorced, because clearly when you find out, hey, tell your mom that your dad's new wife is pregnant, you know that they're divorced. You know that, like, all of this backstory and this history is in place, and it's not beating you over the head with the story. It's not beating you over, like, hey, look, hey, we're in Kenya. Look at these two families. It gives you that trust and ability to recognize that, oh, hey, this is the story that we're telling.
Yeah, I think even when the mom, Kenneth's mom, asks the father or the new wife, like, when is the baby due? When is the baby due? It sounds like, you know, it might have happened as they were breaking up or divorcing. Yeah. So, because she really wanted to know when the baby was due. So, again, that, like, without telling you straight up, you know, what happened, you kind of sort of just think to yourself, well, maybe this all happened around the same time, and that's why she's so, you know, almost bitter about the breakup. And I think there's one point where she's reading some love letters from John, which, yeah, it's just well done. Mm-hmm. You know, there was a lot that was portrayed without, like you said, hitting you over the head with it.
Well, and I think that restraint is why the movie feels so full, even though it is short. Like, even another example I think of is at the end when
that's their ship name. You made their ship name.
Kenna. Zena. I'm like, I'm shipping them.
Ship name. Yep.
Yes, Zena. But yeah, when Kenna opens her locker and she pulls out and briefly looks at a postcard that says, "I missed you, Z," and that to me is like, you can read so much into it. Either like that they've had an ongoing correspondence in the meantime, that she just got that one postcard. Yeah. Like, it could be anything in between. And it doesn't really matter. You just know that she knows. And so then it leads into that, you know, the ending with a brief scene where you don't even see Zeke. You just see her hand on Kenna's shoulder, and it's enough. And it's just like, within that restraint, there's so much.
I like that you can see too in that locker that Kenna has pictures of friends that they're probably like friends that she met in university. And
yeah, she is clearly missing Zeke and obviously excited to see her again, but it hasn't made her depressed in such a way that all she's doing is, I don't know, a trash man person. Like, she's has this dream that got helped along because she wanted to be a nurse, and Zeke's like, hey, you should be a doctor. And so she's like, okay, I'm gonna be a doctor, and moved on, but was able to become her own person and still be super excited that Zeke got back in town. She didn't go get married to be a good Kenyan girl. She, you know, still did what she wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
I think that also just speaks to young love and first, like, I mean, I assume that sounded like it was their first love, because that's, whether it's heterosexual, homosexual, that's what happens. Like, you fall in love, you fall hard, but then you still have to kind of go on with your life in some way if the other person leaves for whatever reason, and continue with your life, basically. And so I think, you know, when you look at a relationship sort of middle age, it's much different. It's much more different in terms of, like, the longevity of it. So this seemed very realistic to me, you know, that she would continue with her studies and her university. And Zeke was probably doing her thing in London as well, right? So I thought that was, like, realistic.
I love Zeke's line at the beginning when they're sort of on their, like, not their first date, but when they're on the rooftop and she's just like, I'm going to go to places where they've never seen an African, and I'm going to be like, hey, I'm from Kenya. Like, it was so cute.
She's like, yo, I'm from Kenya.
She just has, like, such a beautiful energy about her. Oh my God.
And her hair was so gorgeous.
Oh,
with the color and everything, right?
And her lipstick choices. I need to know what lipstick that was, because it was a beautiful stain without, like it just laid on the lips.
I think she
really,
had acted
really
before. I'm on the wiki. She had acted before, but Kenna, it was her first film as an actress. And yeah, she's an amazing job. And the director like met her at a party and was like, hey, you look like this character. So I love that kind of stuff.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm. I mean, she just said so much with her eyes, you know, this brilliant. Yeah, yes. I was blown away at the level of acting because they just drew, you know, and I was watching with my husband and he was like, wow, I can just I can feel the chemistry, you know, like coming off the screen. Well, and I like, again, I think the color and the, like you said, hard and soft. It was just really, really beautiful. Nobody's actually talked about Blackstar.
Please do.
I mean, okay, fine.
What do we do with Blackstar?
When the movie started, I was like, okay, this is going to be her future husband that she's going to have to live with and get married to when whatever happens is going to happen. Because they had that friendship, they had that relationship with each other. They like each other as really good friends. And I was like, okay, I could see that working if that had to happen, or maybe I don't know, that's how my brain was working, was just like, okay, I don't hate him. His friend, on the other hand, I don't even know his name, but I did not like him very much. But Blackstar was an okay person, and I was glad to see that seemed to stay in the story, that he continued to be an acceptable
human.
He was
just like that, like, loud mouth guy in your town who just, you know, won't shut up about everything he's going to do and everything he's done and who he knows. And but in a way that was, like, kind of endearing.
Right.
And he's just sort of, like, relentless hitting on the girls, and they just ignore him. Oh, when they go to the soccer game, and they're like, "You let Kenna play," and they're like, "Oh yeah, she's like one of the guys."
Oh my gosh,
I love that. Those interactions kind of tell you about, like, these people, like, we're meeting them at a certain time in their lives, but they grew up together. Like, these people have probably known each other, like most of them, since they were tiny, and they have that kind of like shorthand and. I liked how whole those relationships felt, even in those brief scenes.
Yeah, and I mean, even the part where I can't remember exactly where it was, where he I think it's after Kenna gets beaten up and I think he sees her and then he holds her and he just hugs her. Oh yeah, and then he takes her for like a little bit of a ride. You know, that just showed the specialness of their relationship. That he wasn't judging her, even though he obviously had feelings for her.
Right.
I thought that was really good. And I thought he had a really nice smile. Yeah, like, he just kind of lit up the room with his smile.
Yeah, that first smile that you see when Kenna's going up the stairs to his apartment. And
I can't remember.
What's her
The girl's
name
coming
out. Yeah. The smile that they have with each other, that Kenna and Blackstar have, is just like, okay, let's get into trouble together. Which could be a whole different story based, like, just that first intro into the movie, you could see so many different things coming from it, which I also really like. I just like that their friendship lasted through the movie.
Yeah, because she even tells him, like, you know, why don't you do something, take her out for dinner, and then she even gives her some money to buy some chips for her.
Yes.
So she's really being a good friend to him, like, helping him along, advising him, because he obviously doesn't know how to, like, woo a woman, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's hard, too, because she's, whatever her name is obviously in love with him, too, which is why she keeps
giving dirty looks to everyone.
So
she's just, like, so pissed at everyone.
Yes.
Yeah, she's really bitter.
My impression is that he was in love with Kenna, or at least planned eventually to marry her, but he still needed to have, like, his kind of playboy lifestyle for a little bit, and so his wild oats sort of thing. And then I think his future was, we're friends now, and eventually I'm going to be the one you settle down with, is sort of what his that's purely headcanon, but that's my headcanon for what he was thinking.
Yeah, no, I think he actually says something like that, doesn't he? Say
You'd be a good wife,
or something like that.
Wow, did you, like, read her wrong? Like, she doesn't seem like she wants to do any of that at all. Even if she were not, you know, if she were straight, like, she doesn't want to be.
She wants to be a
doctor.
or a nurse at the very least.
Yeah. Or, you know, yeah, more than just like that's, yeah, that's if you're trying to woo me, don't tell me I'd make a good wife. That is not how you woo me. I'm like, maybe I would, but that's like so practical and not romantic and not like you love me. It's more like you think I've got a practical skill set that would benefit you. It's also such a dude
thing that he just treats other women so like they're disposable in front of her, and then he's like, no, but you, I would love you. Like, it's like, dude, like, come on. What kind of, do you take all that information? You're like, yeah, but he'll be different with me. It never works out that way, ladies. Never does. Right.
It never does. Yes,
no.
But I think they had kind of like a Joe and Lori relationship. Not to go away. But like where he was like, oh, this is the person I like the best, so that's the person I should get married to. And it's like, no, you're just like misinterpreting the fact that you can be friends with a woman and not have it be romantic or sexual. Like, he's like misplacing like the way that he feels about her, because he clearly feels very strongly about her and like loves her in whatever way.
Yeah. Let's take a moment, and because it doesn't have the same element of travel that we have in our other vacation movies, but let's look at this as our vacation stop in Africa. And does it make you want to visit Kenya?
I mean, yeah.
100%. Yes. I mean, I said this earlier, but it feels like a love letter to Kenya. And I love that it feels real and not this is clearly a set in Hollywood made to look like Africa. And is still just that beautiful side of it that's for the silly Americans that have never, you know, left the continent or have never gone to Africa. And all they've seen is The Lion King. And they're like, oh, yeah, I'm going to go on a safari. It's like, no, this is what Kenya can look like as a location. And it's beautiful and vibrant and colorful and lively, and absolutely take me there. Maybe not today. Let's wait until after a pandemic slows down a little bit.
I would love to go to Kenya, but what I love about this movie is that it really made me feel like I want to visit this world in this way, because the place that we're in, the setting that we're in, and the people that we're among here, it feels so insular. Like, I don't want to like intrude on people's lives. You know what I mean? Like, right. Which, like, I really liked visiting this place as like dropping in and being like a fly on the wall, because it's like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's intimate.
It's
like,
intimate.
I don't want to be like these people, hello, that you already know. Please show me to like trying to order from the cart and like ordering the wrong thing. Like, just like, no. I'm just get like yours. As a white European person, I don't want. I'm like not trying to like insert myself,
right?
But I would love to go.
I actually haven't been to Kenya, and I definitely was on my list. And it was funny, when I was watching the movie, my husband and I were saying, oh, you know, Nairobi has such a reputation for nightlife. Like, it's known for having, like, amazing DJs. And you got a little glimpse of that, I think, with the club scene. So it's definitely – and then there's also Mombasa, which is not too far. And that's right on the coast, so you can get a little bit of ocean and beach. But also what I thought was interesting was that they were making chapatis on the – at that – you know where they were selling the soda?
Mama.
Yeah,
the cart.
Yeah,
which shows, you know, the Indian influence as well in terms of food. Yeah, I mean, I think it's a very diverse place, and it would be, you know, incredible to visit a city, you know, like a real African city. And like you said, not just the safari thing. You could do if you had a couple extra days, maybe.
It's so depressing to I just Googled just to see like what would come up first. I Googled movies set in Africa, and the first thing that came up was Avengers Endgame. I was like, well, here was the list. The top three were
goodness.
Black Panther was third. It was Avengers Endgame. You know how like Google will be like, here, like it's sort of like a bar at the top that you can page through. It was like that kind of a search.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It was Endgame, The Lion King, the live action one, and Black Panther. I was like,
oh my goodness.
This one should be up there.
Yes.
I've actually been to Kenya. I've been to Nairobi.
You've been holding out on us.
Right. Well, Annette, you're holding out on us.
I have. I am married without children, and part of that meant my husband and I have done a lot of travel. So I've been to Africa 3 times, one of them twice. We did Egypt and Kenya in one, which was fantastic. Yeah, and I was with my mother and father-in-law, so the nightlife part was never going to be a thing. But right, we did do the safari part as well, and the landscape of the savannah is stunning and gorgeous and amazing. But also you go to Nairobi, and because I think we always get we get the picture of the safari as Africa.
Right.
But Nairobi is this huge urban center that has like malls that are just like the malls here, and they have restaurants, and you know, like it's just so urban in Nairobi, which is huge. And I just liked seeing that part of it. And we didn't go to Mombasa, but that would be on my list of places to go next, because I've heard it's fantastic and I would go back there in a heartbeat. But yeah, I liked the viewpoint of Africa as an urban place.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Kenya specifically, because like so often we just paint it as a giant safari of all of Africa, whereas like the landscape and people is so much more diverse than what we ever get. So
right.
We need more than the Avengers as our standard fair of how we see
earlier
Africa.
Too. Like, you know, like, I went to Catholic school when I was a kid, and the kind of stuff you hear, like the kind of garbage that they fed us about missions and stuff, it was like, every person in Africa is starving. Yeah. And this is like what they're telling like second grade kids in Pennsylvania who are like, I don't know, like we don't know any different. That's what they tell people. So, and then the movies that you see are all like just like, you know, white people going there. And so I want to be proactive about seeking out more movies like Rafiki that are, you know, made and set and about Africans and because like we're getting the most like distorted picture most of the time.
Yeah, and I think that's when Ziki says, you know, I want to go to the rest of the world or to Europe and tell people, yo, I'm from Kenya, you know, because she already knows that that's not what people are expecting. Right? They're expecting I don't know, some poor person who's got, you know,
a Maasai warrior.
Right? Well, and I just remembered something too. I don't know if this was a default on yours, but the entire thing was subtitled in English. But the first time, so most of the time they spoke in, or I guess not most of the time, but the first part of the movie they're speaking in Swahili, and then all of a sudden my ears were like, whoa, that was an English word, and it was subtitled in English, and I just like, my brain kind of broke a little bit, and I was like, this is how it should be done, because it broke and then it was fine. It was like, oh, well, clearly, like, let's just go with this. That's awesome and amazing. And it felt like how the community would talk, not like, oh, well, we're going to speak in a British accent with our perfectly accented English because we're, you know, English European actors coming to pretend to be African. It felt natural.
They speak a lot of English in Kenya, and like they were speaking, but they were fluidly switching between English and Swahili the entire movie, which I noticed. And I was like, that's so cool. And I really like it. But I think because there's so many dialects and different tribes within Kenya, that there's a lot of different languages. So Swahili and English are the primary, like sort of common languages.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I think like most of Southern Africa and even East Africa is you know, like you said, they were colonized by the English, so English is pretty much spoken by everybody, maybe not fluently, but you know, at least so the language is kind of broken between both, whatever, like Swahili in this case, but if you go to Zimbabwe, it would be Shona in English, you know what I mean, or in South Africa it would be Zulu in English, so people go back and forth really, you know, quite fluidly.
Another 2019 movie that does that too with a different African language is The Boy Who Harnessed the Wind. Has anybody seen that on Netflix? It's Chiwetel Ejiofor's directorial debut, which is a true story about a boy in Malawi who was just very into science and basically like saved his entire village because he taught himself how to make wind turbines.
I've heard about that one.
Which is
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, I did see that. I remember now.
And it goes back and forth. It's the same thing. It's like people throughout the whole movie, people are going back and forth between English and Chichewa, which is I think that's not only do I enjoy the fact that people don't feel the need to be like, we have to put this mm-hmm. in English so that, you know, people in like in North America will watch it.
Right.
But also I just find that it's like in a sensory way, it's very soothing and fun to draw. Like you stop really noting it after a couple of minutes, and then it's just as like it's like pleasurable to hear people go back and forth into something you know very well and then something you don't know very well. And I just it's an enjoyable watching experience. Also a beautifully shot film, this one as well, in Malawi. It's very cool.
Well, I think one of the things as we're traveling around all these movies and countries and talking about a lot of different places, what some of the things that are coming up is that we keep going like, we need to watch this too and this too and this too. And I think this is the good fun part about having a podcast together, is we can assign ourselves homework and get us out of the box of what we would normally just flick on Netflix. But the other thing is, with a lot of the streaming platforms, I'm watching things from Spain, from South America, from India, because it's so accessible now. Whereas before, when you're just working on cable, you're watching whatever is prescribed. Whereas now you're getting a lot of stuff that is from other countries and not necessarily directed at me. And the more I watch it, the more advertising that's coming from different things that aren't in English or aren't from here. And it's like, oh, there's so much out there that you just haven't been aware of that's really good and interesting. And so, yeah, it's just welcome to this global world of streaming and watching more than just North American stuff.
Woo.
Yeah, I couldn't get this movie on Prime, which I thought I could. When I actually went to download it, I found out or stream it. It would only work in the US and not in Canada. Yeah, I signed up for another one. It's Canadian, and it's like $5.99 a month, and there's like tons and tons of movies on that. So, and that's where I got to watch it, so it was great.
Yeah, Netflix, I'm going like way down a path, but it's been really fun to see, like, it's been fun to see Netflix, like international shows on Netflix, like super take off here. Like the teens love Elite. The teens love it. I love Dark Germany. You know, it's there. It really does like open up a lot of different avenues that it was just impossible to kind of get this stuff before.
Yep.
And you really do have to go and like search for. Like, go find a list that's, like, the best international shows on Netflix, because, like you were saying, Annette, it's, like, the algorithm won't show it to you unless you start watching it.
Exactly.
So you kind of have to, like, poke around the internet and look for the hidden gems and then...
Trick it.
You know, and then it'll start suggesting.
And on that note, though, I think we will wrap things up. And I will just say thank you all so much for coming with me to Africa and to Kenya. And maybe someday we'll go for real in person. This is always I just want to take all my smooch
for
agents
real.
And go on a like a little world tour in real life. That would be great. So yeah, thanks
absolutely. For having me.
Agents of Smooch is part of the Incomparable Network, where you can find many great pop culture podcasts. If you're enjoying our show and our virtual vacation, please tell your friends or leave us a review on your favorite podcatcher. You can find us on Twitter at Agents of Smooch. And you can become a member of the Incomparable Network at theincomparable.com. Our members get some fun extra perks, including our growing list of incomprehensible Agents of Smooch tipsy commentaries. And until next time, agents, stay safe.